Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well, doing great, fantastic. I'm excited to be here, folks. Strap in. We are going to have a fun time tonight. Thank you all for embracing your bounce once again. I am just full of it today.
If our pre-pod talks are any indication, yes, you are. Glad to have you. How was the weekend?
It was a good weekend. It was a good weekend. Fun weekend. Happy weekend. Watched some foosball. Enjoyed my time. Texas weather was pretty nice for a second. Wasn't cold. So fantastic. But just also to tune the viewers in, pre-pod did involve Mike Midscala. And I laid out a challenge for Nikias. And I also did Midwich Williams, just to own that.
Yeah, Steve spent the first like 15 minutes of our Zoom call just trashing the Thunder for no reason. I don't know. I'm not sure where the beef comes from, what sparked it, why it's continuing. I'm not sure why plus minus God Kenrich Williams is being slandered, but you know what? It's fine. It's okay. I am here to bring balance to this here podcast. I got you, you know?
I haven't started a pod recklessly in a while, so I figured I'd shake up the formula a little bit. How was your weekend, man?
My weekend was okay. The opposite of yours. You got to enjoy some warm weather. We got more snow here in North Carolina, so that was cool. It was gone by Sunday, so I got to go to church and all that good stuff. Watched plenty of playoff football, so got to turn my brain off a little bit. And then completely lost my mind with that Chiefs-Bills game. So that was fun. But all in all, pretty solid weekend. Can't complain too much. Let's get into some news. Let's step away from the NBA for a minute. First, some WNBA news. Reigning MVP Jonquel Jones is expected to re-sign with the Connecticut Sun. Seems like good news. Courtney Williams is coming back per Christina Williams. How are we feeling about that backcourt now?
I feel a lot better. I think that answers a lot of questions. Now, if I recall correctly, the exit from Connecticut wasn't the cleanest, right?
It was not great, yes.
But hey, reunited. 2022, it's all about pushing forward and doing what's best. I think her playmaking and shot making is going to help Connecticut and fill up a lot of those gaps that showed up during that playoff run.
Do we believe that she will be able to give Jonquel the ball in the fourth quarter?
That's a good question. Can she? Yes. Will she? ... It's a tough pick and pop, though. So it at least opens multiple things up. So it's not just, hey, we can't get her the ball in the post. Now what?
It just kind of devolves into a lot of jump shooting before a lot of stagnation and a lot of late clock possessions, which made their playoff run shorter than I thought it was going to be, at the very least. So, a solid injection of offense onto this roster.
Is this going to be a wild free agency in the WNBA that no one's talking about? Because I feel like something's going to happen.
I would like for it to be wild. Like, Breonna Stewart taking a meeting with the New York Liberty is interesting. I don't know like how much I should be reading into that at all. Like, she is an unrestricted free agent. So maybe it's just, hey, let's hear what you got to say. And then I'm going to re-sign with Seattle. Like, that would be my guess, but that's probably your best chance at like a legitimate firework situation, I feel like.
I wasn't ready for that.
Actually, let me take that back. That's not the only chance for a firework situation, because I still have no idea what's happening with Jewel Lloyd. That's the one. But continue.
Oh, no, I was going to say, if the Liberty go ahead and get Stewart and Dolson, watch out for my takes next year.
Oh, goodness. You were pulling reckless last year, and it almost worked.
Oh, it's going to get even worse.
Oh, goodness. It might work. So we're looking at, oh, man. So Stephanie Dolson up front. You have Breonna Stewart. They already have Natasha Howard. Benaja Laney's there. Sabrina Ionescu. Like, that's a lot of firepower. I'm intrigued. I don't think Brianna's going anywhere, though, so it might be moot, but we shall see. Some Aces news. Raquana Williams is back. Still have no idea what's happening with Liz Cambage, so at the moment, I am dreaming of Asia at the five lineups next year. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have your ace in the hole next year.
Here we go. That's the first one of the pod.
When you go through warmups and you're feeling it, you just have to continue to let it go. First play may not be for you, but the ball swings to you. You got to be ready to attack.
Got to stay ready. I respect it. No record scratches in the offense. That's fine. That's fine. On the college side, shout out to Ayoka Lee, who dropped 61 points against Oklahoma. No three-pointers, a lot of free throws, a lot of post buckets. Not just a lot of post buckets, a lot of quick post buckets. Like literal quick work. They tried to front her, didn't work. They tried to double on the catch, it didn't work. She kept the ball high, quick off the glass. Like it just didn't matter. What 14th rate Oklahoma at the time, but didn't matter what Oklahoma tried to do to her. Just a ridiculous effort from her.
What she did was wild. So I saw a tweet. It said she outscored 40 D1 teams by herself on that day. 61 points.
When she checked out of the game, she had 61 and Oklahoma had 61.
That's insane. And the, like you said, the way she did it, though, like Oklahoma was trying actively. They tried to front and they tried to show help on the backside. Quickly did not work. They went on like 11-0 run to start. And they were just throwing it in there. And her post positioning, my goodness. If you want to look at a clinic on yes. how to get deep position and seal, she planted, arm up, I got it. Oh, I don't have it. Go ahead and swing it to the corner. Now I'm going to turn my hips. I still got it. The seals, the footwork, like when they stopped fronting, she was like, all right, cool. I'm going to bury you and still get this position and post up. And when they pushed back and she didn't get the deep catch, she was like, cool, I'm just going to catch and just turn right over you and hit a shot. And it was like, it did not stop. It was insane. Made Oklahoma look bad. I'm sorry. Also, shout out to Kansas State for a post-entry passing clinic.
There really we go.
Cleansed my palate. I needed to see that. That was insane. Well done. Way to get it in the post. Everyone needs to just take all you NBA teams, please go look at that because y'all can't throw it in the post to save your lives. And it's driving me insane.
See, this is the real reason I wanted to bring this up on the show. Because I knew you would appreciate just how clean the passes were.
Old school, four out, one in. I'm posting up. I'm going right from the elbow right to the block. It was bravo.
Bravo indeed. Again, a clinic. Like if you can't watch the full game somewhere, at the very least, do yourself a favor, go to YouTube and watch the highlights from the 61. Like I'll warn you, at least the video that I watched, I'll warn you the first like minute and a half, you're gonna think, like, why is this repeating? Why is this the same clip over and over again? It's not. Check the game clock, it's different.
You know, it's not just tall layups. There was some hooping going on. There was some skill being displayed. You should go on there and watch it, and you'll see. About halfway through, I was like, "Golly, ooh!" I did the audible. Yeah,
there was just no good answer for her. So again, congrats for breaking that record. All right, let's get into some not so fun stuff on the NBA side. Milwaukee had themselves a weekend, I would say. Kicks off with the Grayson Allen foul on Alex Caruso, who just got back. And we just talked about this on the pod. With the Bulls, seem like they get one guy in and they'll lose another guy. But Caruso attacks the basket. Grayson Allen jumps, tries to contest the shot. And then there's some extracurriculars going on, depending on what your view of that play was. I'm not here to debate that part. Steve, how did you feel about how that play was handled live? And then also, how did you feel about the punishment?
I thought it was a very poor decision from Grayson Allen. And rep regardless, you just can't necessarily do that. Like, I don't know what he was doing. So he runs back, he gets in position. He had a chance to do everything but what he did. Mm-hmm. Like he could have swiped down, could have tried to go vertical, could try to take a charge. Like, if you want to go hard foul, 9 times out of 10, you probably got to do it before they jump. I think I was watching the Cavs game. Ed Davis chased down Nerlens Noel and almost wrapped him around, and Nerlens tried to throw him, and then he tried to throw him. There's ways to do this. But once a guy jumps, the math changes. And like, and so if you're going to go hard foul, you got to get him before he goes up, because you got to let a guy land. Like, you can't just, you know what I mean? If you're not going to get a clean hit, you got to let a guy land. And to do the grab with the left hand in midair and then throw with the right hand, I didn't like that. It was a hard play. And the wind up, I didn't like anything about that. When you alter how someone can land, that's dangerous territory. We don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. Everyone makes business decisions all the time on the court. If you haven't played and watched someone get a breakaway and just ran and been like, all right, you got it. Like, I don't know. There's certain plays where, hey, you got it, man. Like, that. Boo. Boo that.
I feel that. So, it was, the league did end up handing down a 1-game suspension for Grayson. Did you feel like that was enough? Or did you want to see, well, I guess not want to see, but did you expect to see more?
No, that seemed pretty standard. The crime, the outrage, the look. 1 game seems like what the league would do. You could argue maybe multiple, but 1 game seems fair, I guess, in this sense. Not a lot of guys get suspended for flagrant fouls. I think that was deserving.
Okay. That's fair. And then later we get a situation with Wes Matthews, who gets hurt, looks hobbled during a play, and ended up being a knee contusion, if I remember correctly. But he was just on the court for live play for like a minute and a half. And the clip looked bad. Like, I don't know if there's any other way to say that. Like, the clip did look bad watching him hop and hobble going end to end while also trying to play. Like, he was tried to nurse the knee and then slide against the pick and roll. And on the other end, he would nurse the knee and then he's setting like pin in screens. And it just kept going and it kept going. I appreciated your commentary on the video. So if you don't mind, if you could share your thoughts on like what that was for you.
Well, I mean, the video is uncomfortable. I get the visual is uncomfortable and I can understand where people go. I guess I probably go into unpopular opinion land, but I'll land there. It's been a minute. I don't know if I would frame it the way it has been sometimes, just because once Wesley Matthews pops back up, as a coach, as a teammate, you kind of hope/assume he's good because he went down hard. But then he pops right back up and he's sprinting. And so that's one of those things where guys will earn that toughness reputation and play through it. And you hope to hear from them if they're really hurt. But to your point, Wes pops up and he keeps playing, but he's hobbling. But he's still playing. So at some point, you're not sure, okay, is he warming this thing up? Is it loosening up? Are we getting back to it? So Wesley Matthews is Wesley Matthews. He has the nickname Iron Man for a reason, which doesn't make it any better, but guys play through things. You know, like you said, he's still making rotations and boxing out and switching with half a leg. Like, so he probably earned that toughness as a coach. You know your guys, and it becomes a battle of protecting your guy versus knowing your guy. And I think for Budenholzer, that probably is a situation he may have wanted to pull the plug a little bit earlier. But at the same time, Wes is a guy who's played through those kind of things. And the one thing you don't want to do is cut a guy off when he's about to be all right, if that makes sense. It's where, hey, we take this foul, and then he shakes it off, and he's fine. And that's like, you know, Coach, what are you doing? I'm good. There was probably a point where they needed to pull the plug. I want to say it was around the 118 mark of that, where he is clearly in front of the bench, like, yo, my knee. And I think the assistant coaches probably got a hold of Bud after that, like, hey, we need to call timeout. But it's part of the game. Like, I'm not mad at Bud or Wes. Wes for trying to play through it, or Budenholzer for trusting his guy. It's just one of those tough circumstances. If you played, you know, you play through a lot. And what hurts in 1 second, it feels fine a minute later. like, shoot, I dove into the stands and cracked my leg to the white, kept playing. Couldn't feel it the next day, but it was fine.
Gonna be honest, it doesn't sound fine.
The scar's gone. We're good.
Well, I mean, I guess if that's the bar, I guess. Oh, man. But okay. But I guess to your framing point, there was a lot. Like, when I saw the video, my reaction was, I don't even know how many question marks I put. And I was just kind of like, yo, what? Because I guess that's where I felt like it kind of got to a gray area with me. Because I agree with you. Like, we see it in NBA games all the time. A guy might turn his ankle, limp for half a possession or limp for a full possession, and then he's back to business. Either the adrenaline kicks in or he's legitimately fine. It's kind of whatever. Where the question, the abundance of question marks came in for me, where it's like, okay, this isn't, it's been a possession or a possession and a half, and now he's good. This is going end to end like three times now. And now this is like a minute straight of like live play, and it's him looking very uncomfortable. And at that point, that's why I'm genuinely asking, like, okay, what is the threshold here? Because the video, I think, was like 138 or something like that. So I'm just like, okay, do you give it 30 seconds? Do you give it 45 seconds? And then as a coach, you're like, okay, wait, he might actually be hurt. Or even if he isn't, let's give him some time on the bench to kind of calm down. Like, I don't know what the answer to that is, but that was where it got kind of iffy for me.
No, it's a long stretch. So I will say that it is a long stretch. But the weird part is, as much as Wes hobbled, he never really made a motion towards the bench. Like, if it had been a situation where he had made kind of a motion to the bench, then I'd be like, all right, man, like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? But he's trying to play through it. So it's like, I understand how the trust kind of happened there. And that's the other part sometimes is like, sometimes you just need to stay down for a second, you know, and just, you know, as a teammate, just let him, hey, teammates also could have said something. That's the other part where it's like, clearly my guy's not right. Like, can we get him? It was weird. The length of it was weird more than anything else.
Yeah, that's just where I was like, okay, I don't, like 40 seconds in, I was like, okay, somebody's got to do something. Like, let's get a foul. Let's get a timeout. Like, I don't know, like take a three in the key or something. Like, I don't know, like something. Just to stop playing to see what was going on after a certain amount of time. But
nah, I hear you. It's one of the hard things where you it's impossible to not sound like a caveman when you relate and understand. Okay. So I totally get where you see it and be kind of comfortable, but I could totally get where Wes was probably just like, I was good. You know, the mindset of players, that's always the most fascinating thing to me. And as like we do more of this social media and we get more perspectives, it's always funny to see the reactions to it. But that's a different pod for a different day.
I see. We may have to dig into that bag at some point. While we're on the injury front, Anthony Davis is set to return against the Brooklyn Nets on Tuesday night. It has been a minute, to say the least. I think it's safe to say the Lakers could use this infusion of talent, particularly in the front court. If you could pinpoint one thing you're looking forward to in terms of Anthony Davis's return, what would you say it is?
In classic Steve fashion, I have three, but I'll go one to start.
All right.
Number one for me, what does he bring to the table defensively? What does he do for them on that end? Because part of the 80 at the 5 deal with this unit was teams spaced his man. Those guys got beat, and he couldn't have the same impact. So I want to see how that looks like.
It sounds familiar.
Rudy Gobert. Can he help their switching? So like the Lakers are in a weird place switching-wise where they have shown they can do it, but then they also forget how to do it, and then they just don't do it. And can he now elevate that by being a switch big again? By being someone who's going to contain the ball and kind of solidify them switching 1 through 5 again. That's probably my number one thing. What's your number one takeaway?
My one thing, like, I just want to see what he does for the lineups. And I don't know if that's a boring answer or not, but like, that's kind of where I'm looking at this. Because if AD's back, like, how much Bron at the five do we even see? What does AD being back mean for the big man room? Because we've seen, obviously, we've seen DeAndre Jordan, Dwight Howard in the rotation. We've seen both of them out of the rotation. We've now seen Dwight back in the rotation and Dwight starting. And so now I'm just like, okay, so does this go back to AD at the four, Dwight at the five now? And then they kind of flow from there. Do we just go straight to AD at the five so they can stay somewhat small? And then beyond that, like, okay, with AD back in the picture, like, surely the second unit is going to look better now. Or the non-LeBron men is going to look a little bit better. Like, maybe we get to see the Russ-Anthony Davis partnership build some chemistry or continue to build some chemistry. Maybe that helps. And if you have an anchor on those, like, hybrid second units in AD, then maybe you can afford to play more of your shooting. And maybe that makes life a little bit easier on Russ. Like, the lineups are the interesting part of this Anthony Davis thing for me.
No, that was also on my list. That was a big one, the rotation. I would imagine from everything that we've heard, Anthony Davis is probably going to be the center. So the big man room is probably going to be Anthony Davis featuring glimpses of Dwight Howard. Now, I'm assuming they start him at the five. The question for me is, where do you go after that? Do you flow right into Dwight? Does the small ball unit not exist anymore? Does AD at the five now translate to the second unit in the start of the second quarter? Like, that's going to be some tricky parts for a team that's already searching for lineups. Now you have another piece, but now you're trying to get the flow of the rhythm. You kind of found something small ball wise, but you don't really want to do it. So, like, LeBron at the five is a thing, but I'm sure it's a thing you'd like to keep on ice a little bit more than you've had to. So I would imagine we probably get AD at the five, flow into Dwight, and then kind of play from there back to AD back and forth. Does he stabilize kind of those smaller lineups? So you conceptually can still do the same thing you were doing, but now with AD at the five instead of LeBron. I just wonder who they start. Do you stay defensive minded?
I feel like that would be a very Vogel thing to do. And I don't even mean that in a bad way. Like, Vogel's just wired that way. Like, he wants the offense, like, even in the title year, they won because, all right, cool, we're going to size up. We're going to dominate the paint on both ends. And then we're going to flow from there. And so that's, again, that was kind of my question with the lineups. Like, do they just start off with Bron, AD, Dwight in the front court? Sounds like a spacing nightmare. But also, I could see, like, the Lakers just haven't been a good defense pretty much all year long. So I wonder if this is the point where Vrankel's like, okay, we need to make a shift. The shift needs to come on the defensive end. Let's set a tone now that AD's back. Let's make this push. Let's start here. Like, it wouldn't shock me if that's the move for him.
Well, I mean, just looking at it, I believe there were two games pre-injury, if I'm Googling correctly, where he started at the five with Avery, THT, LeBron, and Russ. So now I assume we probably get, what, AD, Avery, Ariza, LeBron, and Russ, be my guess. Now, here's the question. I don't know how you flow into AD at the four if you start him at the five. Not that it's impossible, but in my head, I'm trying to think. Unless you brought him in at the four with the second unit, how that would work.
I need to pull up, like, the advanced rotation builder from 2K and try to sort through it.
The Nikialytics, also a nice plug. I like it.
Oh, brother. I don't know how I feel about that one. But
the ink is dry.
Okay. Yeah, we're not starting this. Absolutely not.
The hashtag is big ink, folks.
Okay. I hate everything about this. Okay. Welcome back, Anthony Davis. Hope you play well. Hopefully his presence stabilizes things for a Laker team that has ultimately disappointed for most of the year so far. So we shall see how that goes.
Also, use him well offensively, please. Don't just let him be a post-up spacing guy. Please, please, please. Let's use him in different ways. But continue. Sorry.
I was just capping it off. I agree with you. It would be nice to see some more versatile usage from him. And just from the AD perspective, like, knock down some jumpers, man. Like, if you're going to play the way that you play, at least knock down the shots. Like, it doesn't have to be the bubble run, which just seems to be an anomaly of all anomalies for him. But at the very least, you can't be one of the worst jump shooters in basketball, one of the worst volume jump shooters in basketball. Like, that can't happen. Raise the bar there a little bit. Some of this stuff kind of work itself out in terms of his usage. So we shall see. Let's flow into some teams. Steve, who's caught your eye lately?
We're going to go ahead and talk about the Phoenix Suns. This is just for you, man.
Well, I appreciate that.
Hey, no worries. That's what we got to do. 2022, it's all about love. Six straight wins for the Suns coming in tonight. They've won seven straight road games. They swept a whole five-game road trip. And let me tell you, that is not easy. Like, if you get three out of five on a five-game swing, you're hyped coming home. Mm-hmm. You get five? Oh, buddy. You are juiced, ecstatic. They got a plus 8 point differential on the season, if that's your vibe. 18 home wins, 18 road wins. I believe the only team to have that number. And I think coming in tonight, they were number two in defensive rating, number five in offensive rating, and number one in net rating. And they're the only team in the top three for all three.
That pretty much makes the case. Like, that's that's
what I brought the Nikkei analytics for you. Huh?
There we go. I am. Stop me if you heard this before, but I am enjoying watching Suns basketball. I am enjoying the heck out of Chris Paul's season. I wish he could knock down threes. That would be cool. Like, bring that back. Did not expect to see rookie year Chris Paul as a three-point shooter this year, but just neither here nor there. Everything else, though, the mid-range shooting, the playmaking.
We got Chris Paul slander on the pod.
Here we go.
Save this episode, folks.
Don't do this. Don't dare try to put me against Chris Paul. My feelings on Chris Paul are very well documented.
Yes, you love him more than your family. I got you.
Some members. Got to make sure that is in there. But no, in all seriousness, like, Chris Paul has been excellent. Devin Booker has been excellent as well. Like, we talked about their dynamic a little bit on the last pod in terms of, like, the award race and, like, how much splitting was going to go on there, like, who you would deem as having the better season so far this year. Within this context, though, Chris Paul's really freaking good. Devin Booker's really freaking good. And they can get it however you need them to. If you need Devin Booker to take over, like, Booker, I think, had a 19-point first half against whatever version of Utah this is. I hope they get healthy soon. But anyway, like, he had a big first half against them in this game. We're recording on a Monday night. Going back to last week, the Suns Mavericks game, Chris Paul closed it out. And that was after Devin Booker had himself one heck of a stretch during the game. So, like, they can just kind of pick their spots. Which, honestly, I just don't know. They're just tough, man. Like, that sounds cliche and basic, but, like, they're just a tough unit to deal with on both ends of the floor. They can flow between defensive coverages still. Like, I think having the big man room that they have, even with Ayton in and out of the lineup, they are still able to do a multitude of things defensively. They can drop JaVale. They can drop Bismack. They can play Bismack a little bit higher if they need to. In 1-4, they're still able to switch and scram out of stuff if they need to. And then offensively, it's just, okay, we're going to pick at the Achilles heel of whatever your defense. And it just doesn't matter at a certain point.
No, they are. Every time I watch them this season, they are in every game, night in and night out. And I always say, this is such a professional basketball team. Which sounds incredibly boring. And of course, they are a professional basketball team, Steve. But every night, they are in it on both ends of the floor. And it's weird because we've had such a good year from Chris Paul and Devin Booker has really grown. Yet this doesn't necessarily feel like it's a team reliant on Chris Paul and Devin Booker. They're just also really good. But the offense, the sets they run when you watch them, they just really execute very well. Their movement is done very well, and they put you in a position as a defense to make decisions. I mean, in this game against Utah has them defended, and you'll appreciate this. Phoenix, just without a play call, flows right into spam pick and roll. Like, literally, Chris Paul's like, what are we doing? Devin Booker goes to screen for JaVale McGee. He sets a back pick and then goes back door. But just being able to process that quickly, to have that kind of decision-making, That's been the big leap for me. Offensively, they are making quicker decisions. If they don't have something, that ball is moving. Their bodies are moving. They're keeping pressure on you that way, as opposed to it having to be strictly from the set. Their flow is a lot better. And I think the way they use their guys is really good. You have a guy like Cam Johnson you could use off screens and spacing. You have pick and roll with Chris Paul where you could put him in the middle of the floor, but you can also bring him off the side and leave the corner empty. You have Devin Booker, and you can use him in a multitude of ways, off staggers, handoffs, bringing the ball up in transition, throw ahead. And then what they've done with Mikal Bridges, I think, has been really good. We know he can cut, and his flashing ability has been good, but they also use him against other teams. So they use him as a screener for Devin Booker so that, hey, you guys want to switch, he's slipping.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've made him a threat that now you have to think about. And they keep using and finding ways to make guys threats. I mean, heck, they got, look at the production they're getting from Bismack Biyombo and JaVale McGee on a nightly basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really fun to watch. And defensively, you mentioned the versatility. Being able to have 1 through 4 that you could switch with and also have a consistent big that can do multiple things, whether it's McGee or Biyombo or Ayton, you need them in a drop, that's fine. We've seen JaVale come up to the level, a trap. We've seen activity. That just puts a lot of pressure on teams. So I've really enjoyed what Phoenix has done. And you got to give them credit, man. Like, to be at this run after last year, to not really skip a beat and to get better, it's really hard to win in the NBA. And Phoenix is doing it again. So salute to Monty Williams, salute to the Suns.
Are they your favorites in the West right now?
Favorites is an interesting term. I would say yes, but I feel like their path could get interesting.
Because I think, well, as of right now, and again, like playing games, whatever, but if you just go static 1 through 8, they would have the Lakers round 1. They would have either Utah or Dallas in round 2. And in round 3, I guess you kind of assume it's Golden State.
Preview for the slander. I love it.
Oh, here we go.
But see, that's where it's like, that's not the easiest path. Mm-hmm. Not they couldn't do it, but that's not the most fun. Where, hey, we got to deal with potentially the Lakers, whatever version they are. And then our reward is Utah. And then that's 3 teams to go through. Like, I take the 2 seed this year. Give me Minnesota and Memphis. All due respect.
Wow. I did not expect Memphis slander from you. That's
it's not slander. Come on.
That's pretty interesting. Wow.
I paid taxes in the state. Come on.
Oh, now we have more reason why the slander's coming. You had to give them some of the hard-earned money. I respect it. The truth comes out. That's pretty interesting to me. To answer my own question, like, I think Phoenix is. Like, I think they've been this steady all year long. And, like, while they haven't been hit as hard, per se, as other teams, like, Devin Booker's missed time. DeAndre Ayton has been in and out of the lineup. Like, they've missed 2/3 of their pillars for a not insignificant amount of time. And they've still been able to hum. I wish I could remember which account tweeted it out. But at least heading into Monday night's action, like, in the games in which they've had their starting five, I think they've won 78% of their games. And their win percentage is higher than that. They've won 80% of their games all season long. So, like, they've been better somehow, record-wise, while they're missing pieces in their starting lineup. Like, they've been machine-like. And again, like, the level of versatility they have on both ends of the floor is... it's insane. It is absolutely insane.
So we've done all these pods just for you to get us right back to Suns and Bucks in the finals. That's what we're doing.
I will just say, you know, it's, you know, January 24th, you know, but I would just say that I would not be shocked if that is the series that we get in June. Is that a diplomatic enough way of saying it? Would not surprise me if those are the 2 teams dancing in the finals.
Fair enough.
That's a good shot. Okay. If we could transition, like, I have a couple of teams that I want to throw out there. Shout out to the Charlotte Hornets, who have the seventh best defense in the league in the month of January.
Oh, so we have a rotating wheel. Are you officially loud wrong on the Hornets defense, or is this just a good month?
Look, because like I've been catching like stray portions of Hornets games as of late. And then, again, I just need to start saving these tweets and adding them to my personal notes so I can shout them out correctly. But anyway, I just saw the tweet where it's like, you know, Charlotte has like a top five defense or something like that. I was like, wait a minute. No. And so I looked at NBA.com when I saw that tweet. I was like, well, I mean, they are actually defending at a high level. Then I zoomed out to January. And I was like, this is actually like a somewhat extended stretch of good defense from the Hornets. What's going on here? So wanted to watch some clips, wanted to watch some games. And the first thing that stands out is like, okay, this is a lot of zone. This is a lot of zone. They're doing it again. And like in a vacuum, I enjoy it. Like you're seeing some 2-3, but like they're throwing in some 1-3-1, which is fun to me. It's like a three quarters press into a 1-3-1 with Cody Martin at the top. And it's just like, wait, this is pretty good. Also, shout out to Cody Martin, who is also having himself a solid season. You know, we've talked about the twin in Miami, but Cody's having a solid season too. But anyway, I'm looking at the 1-3-1. Like they'll have Cody Martin at the top. They'll have Terry Rozier at the top sometimes. I've seen Ish Smith at the top applying some ball pressure. And then they just kind of flow and rotate out of that. And then they give up a bunch of corner threes, and those threes are missing right now. So it's like, okay, cool. But that also lends me to believe like, okay, this is kind of where I was with them last year, where I'm just like, okay, the offense is good and fun. Eric Collins is a joy with LaMelo story lost to Miles Bridges and stuff. What is the defense going to be like? And last year, the defense was not great, but it was enough, mostly because they used by far the most amount of zone in the NBA. And that is true right now. They lead the NBA in zone possessions by a wide margin. Synergy had them at just at virtually 11% of their total defensive possessions, which is far and away higher than anybody else in the league. But I'm worried about a team. And I don't know if I'm just wrong. I could be wrong on that. Like, this is just how I feel about it right now. Like, I worry about a team that needs zone to the degree that Charlotte does. It feels like I felt this way a little bit last year, and I definitely feel like this now, where it's like, it feels like they've crossed the line between, okay, zone is a legitimate weapon for us versus we need the zone so we can get enough stops to make this work. And I feel like that's a dangerous place to be in.
It's a great place to be in the regular season.
That's fair.
It's not a great base going forward. It's almost the old Miami question when their zone was really humming, but they had to play zone. And it was like, okay, this is good, but when you have to play zone that much, you're exposing the zone to more teams. There's more tape on it. And the more possessions you play a zone, the tougher position you put yourself in. So for me, I think I'm with you. I like Charlotte having the zone in their back pocket. I don't like that being the thing that works for them defensively just because there's a limited shelf life. Now, I have a question for you. How do you feel about their shift defensively? Before I get to this point, how funny is it that Trae Young faced both Martin twins in consecutive games and Loki gave them both buckets? Like, that has to be a weird deal, right?
Yeah. FaceTime had to be interesting after that one. You just answered the call like, yep, you're not. But I don't know. I'm just in a weird place with the defense in general. Cause like, I mean, I have the zone thing. But like also, they can only play drop with Mason Plumlee. And that's not a good place to be in either.
Wow. A return to Mason Plumlee slander.
It's not slander, because like he's legitimately been fine for them. It's a remix of the... Okay, I'm not about to rope that back in. My thing is, Mason Plumlee is fine. The issue is that they rely on Mason Plumlee. And I don't think he's good enough to be relied on. That's the issue. Not that he's a bad player.
Coach Michael Malone would have disagreed with you at one point in time.
Of course, and he's well within his right to do so. That man knows much more about basketball than I do. But I'm just saying, from my, like, he makes their base work, but also that base also isn't very good. And that's not even a Plumlee thing. It's just they're still kind of a mess at the point of attack. And so that's putting a lot of strain on Mason Plumlee, especially this version of Mason Plumlee, to clean things up. And he's like the only big in the room that has a chance to clean it up and drop. PJ Washington comes in and they're kind of switching everything. Like, that's fun. But even then, like, is fun good? I don't know. It's different.
It's a weird dynamic because if you remember last year, this was a very, very active defense, which was very fun to watch, but also opened a lot of things up. So it was heavy based on help, based on rotation, based on activity. The drop, in theory, should help with some of that, right? We can keep it in front. We can stay solid. The problem is, like you mentioned, their guards aren't the best at navigating those screens, and that drop doesn't have the same oomph if there's no guard getting back in the play, and now it's Mace just kind of backpedaling. And it feels like more teams can lead the dance against them in pick and roll than before, which is just kind of like it's an odd dynamic for them. Because you want them to be active, but you don't want them to be active to break things down. But now they're kind of in this in-between where it gives you a more of a chance, but you're also kind of at the mercy of the offense. And that's kind of where I'm like, okay.
I feel that. But it's funny. I want to shout out the Hornets and now basically start them off with the things that he go home section. Like, that doesn't seem very fair to them. But like,
yeah, I'm gonna need you to turn this around, buddy.
Yeah. Like, I'll say, I guess to sum it up, like, I have long-term concerns about the zone usage, but the zone is doing its job. Like, it is working. Like, going back to last week's matchup against the New York Knicks, the Knicks just couldn't solve it. It was just a hilarious thing to watch them try to sort through that. And like, you would think, okay, cool, they're running zone. Let's try to get a guy in the middle of the floor. And it's like, no, there's always someone there. And so it just turned into a bunch of Julius Randle trying to ISO, turned into trying to drive in the cluttered driving lanes. It turned into a bunch of Emmanuel Quickly deep threes, which that's kind of within his wheelhouse anyway. But from a process standpoint, like, you take that from Charlotte. So like, they are getting some good stuff out of it. I don't bring it up to poo-poo on it. My thing is less like, okay, I wish this was a counter instead of this is the solution to our problems right now.
I'm with you. Charlotte, they're such a fun team to watch. If you watch this team play offense, they just get out there and go. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is they're in a weird place. I don't want to say perception-wise, but you think about this team, right? And my mind always goes to, can this work in the playoffs? Can they make a step in the playoffs? Which isn't fair and kind of takes away from how good they are offensively. I mean, because I think technically, what is this, a top something offensive team in the league. I should be more prepared in my platform, but I'm speaking into a microphone. But at the, I was trying to do Googling, my computer was slow. They're number six in offensive rating. So there you go. This is a top tier team. But at the same time, there's fourth quarter issues and question marks, which is mainly, hey, did Terry Rozier do stuff? Did Gordon Hayward do stuff? Did them doing stuff open something else up for someone else? And that's the fourth quarter offense. And these games get tight. So you have this dynamic of this is this fearless offensive team that could just get up and down and not care versus this is a team that could get bogged down and now what? And then you throw in the defensive issues, and now it's like, they're really fun to watch. I enjoy them, but what does it really mean? That's what I always go back to. But at the same time, they're four games out of the top spot in the East, but they're the number seven seed.
Yeah. The East is fun. Steal your line. The East is fun. But like, to that Charlotte offense, like, they are an absolute blast in transition. And I do think... One, they really feel the absence of Gordon Hayward when he isn't there, particularly late in games, because he's such a connector for them. And he is like, he is their mid-range creator on the roster. Because like Terry's doing it with a bunch of pull-ups and sidestep threes. Like LaMelo, ideally, he's still trying to figure out the rim stuff. But like ideally, he's pulling up. And if he has it going, then there's only so much you can do with him. Like Gordon Hayward is kind of your get you a dirty bucket guy. And when they don't have him, it really can get a little bit stagnant. But I also think that's why I've had fun watching Miles Bridges this year. Like aside from the dunks, and he's been incredible in that department as well. But like we talked about it a little bit on the last show, the award show, where I have him as my most improved player. Like he is legitimately growing in the half court. And so ideally he does give you another element. He does give you another outlet where if you're able to bend it some kind of way, he can attack and capitalize on that window. And so I think the goal for this year, if you're Charlotte, like obviously you want to get into the playoffs and stuff, but like on a smaller level, like who's going to pop in the half court for you? Or who's taking steps to solving that question for you? Because like LaMelo clearly isn't there yet, but like even then we've had some flashes from him. Like I want to, it wasn't a game where I think it was a go-ahead shot a week or so ago where he's like drifting to his left and gets a righty floater to go. And like, it looks weird, but like he does have floater touch. And the fact that he was able to create that look and get it to go in a crucial moment was like, okay, cool. Like maybe this is something we can build off of. Maybe LaMelo isn't going to be the, okay, 3 minutes left, I'm going to get to the line three times for six free throws and close it down. He may not be that guy. He may not be the limit post up matchup guy. But if he's able to shake and pick and roll and he's deadly enough from 28 feet out to where you have to jump out at him, and then that creates the driving window for him, and then he can get to his floater, like maybe that's going to be his pathway moving forward. And I think those reps are going to be important for him. But I guess it's just trying to figure out like how quickly is he going to get that? And if he doesn't, what does Charlotte do? That answer seems to be Hayward right now with a very large dose of Terry Rozier. And with those being the answers, like it's been hard to count on Hayward to be healthy. Like that's kind of why he's in Charlotte to begin with. And then with Rozier, like it's just kind of a high variance thing for him. And so like I'm trying to strike the balance between, okay, Charlotte is in part two and a half, part three of their rebuild. Like they have their guy, they have quality young pieces around LaMelo, they have vets. They're trying to make the push into the playoffs. So I'm trying to balance like, okay, this is where they are versus, okay, I have playoff brain. What does this look like in the postseason? I have questions. And so now I feel like I've been overly critical on a legitimately good stretch of basketball from the Hornets. And I don't mean to be.
No, but I think that's a good thing for them, right? As you get better, as you progress and quote unquote rebuild, you want the novelty to wear off a little bit and be evaluated. You know, as a team, like think about how we're talking about Charlotte now as opposed to last year. They were just fun last year. Good, but it was mostly look at them. They're fun. They're still fun this year. Like their tempo, their pace, drive and kick, the transition. But they got some questions. And now you want to see if you can answer those this year to know what you need to do to get to the next step. To crack into that top five. Do we have enough here? Like to me, how do you feel about their small lineups? Like in theory, those should be really fun. Can they defend? Like sometimes it becomes like a yin yang type deal where it's like, okay, y'all are driving all over the place, but also on the other end, are you switching? Are you showing? Or the ball's in the paint a lot? Zone doesn't hit the same. I don't know. So it's like, I like Charlotte though.
Charlotte's fun. Like I feel kind of bad. We're just like, all right, cool. We just, like, here's a team I want to shout out. Here are all the questions that I have about them right now. Like, that doesn't seem very fair to them. Like, I don't want to lose sight. Like, they are legitimately playing well right now. And they are making some progress in the Eastern Conference standings. It's just kind of tough because, like, everyone else is also kind of playing well right now, which isn't Charlotte's fault. But that's just kind of the place they're in. To answer your question about their small ball lineup, their most used lineup without a traditional center is LaMelo, Terry Rozier, Miles Bridges, Gordon Hayward, and PJ Washington. In 83 minutes, a 102.7 offensive rating and a 119.7 defensive rating per NBA.com. That is, let's say that's not going to do it. A 120 defensive rating with that group is not what you want at all. So we shall see what Charlotte looks like moving forward. The other team that I want to shout out was the team that just blasted the Hornets on Sunday, oddly enough. The Atlanta Hawks, who are now winners of four straight. Trae Young has continued to be incredible. We are seeing DeAndre Hunter find his rhythm. He's been defending any and everyone and has been giving stars problems. Like, the work he's done on Jimmy Butler as of late has been, whew. You could tell the Hawks missed having that kind of guy on the wing. Let's just put it that way. Want to give a quick shout out to Onyeka Okongwu, who filled in as a starter for Clint Capella while he was out. Would also like to plug the piece that I just wrote on Onyeka Okongwu last week. If you want to check that on basketballnews.com. But Onyeka's fun, flying around defensively. His defensive performance on Giannis on MLK Day, still ringing in my mind. But just that level of activity, that level of versatility, you can switch him, you can blitz him if you need him to. He can play in the drop. Only 6'8", 6'9", but he does have plus-plus wingspan, so he's able to navigate those waters. Offensively, has touch in the intermediate area, can toss in some hooks, can toss in some floaters for you. It's a lob threat and pick and roll. I am very excited for his future. I want to see how Atlanta navigates the center room moving forward. Kevin Herter's playing well. He's knocking down threes. Your guy, Danilo Gallinari, is cooking right now for that second unit in Atlanta. And so it just kind of begs the question, like, is this the stretch that gets them to turn things around? Because it feels like, at least I've been waiting on the Hawks to not even flip the switch, just get their act together all season long. Because aside from the Lakers, or even including the Lakers, has there been a more disappointing team in the NBA than the Hawks this year? I would say no.
That's a good question. I'm going to try and counter Boston.
It's hard for me to say Boston just because, like, I felt like I was in the minority for being high on them, as high as I was on them to begin the year.
Okay. All right. Boston's out. The Knicks?
I will say the Knicks have been worse than I thought, but like we did the pod with Mike Prater before the year when we was previewing the Southeast Division. Like, I think he had Atlanta winning the division, if I'm not mistaken. And like, again, the Hawks were coming off the Eastern Conference Finals. They're bringing their guys back. Like, I don't think anyone expect, even if you felt there was going to be some regression, like, I would assume like this, okay, the Hawks are going to be 4 or 5 because we believe the other team. Not the Hawks are going to be outside of the play-in in mid-January. Like, that's such a steep drop-off. And, like, they've had injury stuff, too. But, like, it's been a hot mess for Atlanta.
How much of this is DeAndre Hunter coming back? And how much of this is we have our guys, these are the guys that are playing? How much do you think that's helped them?
I think having some sort of continuity helps. And having some, just knowing who's playing on any given night. Because part of the issue was, like, one, you just didn't know who was playing. And then beyond that, like, you didn't know who was playing together. It's trying to shuffle out answers with the bench while also going all bench, which was an adventure. And then you added the injuries. Like, okay, cool. Now we got to bring some guys deeper off the bench and try to figure this out. And this is all while the defense just hasn't looked like it was supposed to all year long. Like, even during this stretch, like, they've been better defensively. They still haven't been great. And so that's still a thing that needs to be answered. They have been great team-wide, I should say. Like, again, Onyeka's giving them good stuff. DeAndre Hunter's giving them good stuff. Like, Clint Capella has stabilized things as well. First coming off the bench when he got back, and then now going back into the starting lineup. But, like, there still needs to be more of a collective effort for them to get back to, you know, if they want to get back to where they were last year, like, there's still more work to be done.
There is. Do you feel better about the lineups overall? Do you feel like they fit each other a little bit more, having Collins, Capella, Hunter, Herter, and Trey, but the bench being Lou Will, DeLon Wright, Gallinari, Okongwu, and Kevin Knox? Do you feel better about...
I'm going to be honest. I've already seen enough Kevin Knox.
Wow.
I'm going just
with, going with Kevin Nah.
Oh, no. Okay. I'll let you have that one. But good Lord. Yeah, I've already seen enough. Man, like.
I'm still intrigued. I like the fit. I don't know if we're going to get the production, but you got a tall guy you can space.
Man, if he's missing threes off the backboard, like the one thing you do is shoot. He still doesn't particularly, like, he's on a new team, so he gets some bail at least. But, like, generally, like, he hasn't been a guy that knows where to be on either end of the floor. And so when you have that and you're not knocking down shots, this is like, yo, what do you do exactly?
My overall point was, hey, they got a roller, they got some spacing, two guys that can run. Seems like they have a better flow. And this just came. Nekias climbed to the top rope, pointed to the skies, and dropped the elbow right on Kevin Knox's chest. Moving right along. All right.
I get your overall point. But no, I do think there's a little bit more flow at their lineups to answer your question. I am sorry for it. I'm sorry for dropping the elbow on Kevin Knox, I guess. No 5-star frog splash on Kevin Knox.
Hey!
Okay. We here. But a quick shout out to the Atlanta Hawks, who seem to be turning some things around. Yeah, I guess we can cap it there. The team that makes me go, right now.
I can't wait. I cannot wait. We went from Hornet slander to Hawks slander. And folks, buckle up. It is time.
You are very much gassing this.
The hashtag is Big Steph.
Is this what we're on? Are we sure?
Pre-pod, someone on this pod said that he was no longer in the MVP voting race.
Yeah, I don't know who said that.
It's trying to build up for drama. Never mind. Go ahead.
Oh, you know what? I have one more team to shout out before we get into the whom section. Do you know who has the NBA's best offense this month?
This is going to be a curveball that I'm not sure about. Dallas?
No.
Okay. The Sixers?
No.
Can I get a conference? The Heat?
No. The Heat are fourth, though.
Ah. I'm running out of the Blazers?
No. Shout out to Anthony Simons, though.
Oh, this is a good one. I feel like I'm going to tap out. This is going to be someone like the Pelicans or something, isn't it?
It is not the Pelicans.
Okay. The Cavs?
No.
I'm running out. I'm out of hipster picks.
Folks, the NBA's best offense in the month of January, the Minnesota Timberwolves. I would just like to point out that they're starting to figure some stuff out. They're also starting to knock down some threes. That's helpful. But like they're coming. That's all I have to say. They are doing the thing. Shout out Kat, shout out Anthony Edwards, shout out D'Lo. Anyway, that's all I had to throw in there. Just for your reaction alone, that was worth it. But
hey, salute them. They are no longer mid-Minnesota.
Oh, come on. Oh, brother. Anyway, while we're on offense, let's talk about a bad one right now. The Golden State Warriors, since December 16th, have the 26th ranked offense in basketball. Steph Curry has not played particularly well. Or at the very least, he has not shot particularly well. Let me not say he hadn't played well. He hasn't shot well in a minute now. I just want to know, what is your concern level with Golden State's offense? Like, is it just as simple as, hey, they're missing their connector and Draymond, they're going to be fine? Or are there like underlying issues that have kind of been exposed during this stretch?
There's definitely question marks, but I'm not going to judge them until Draymond's back. So, I mean, if you want to talk about Jordan Poole has gone left, that's a big problem. Or, hey, do they have enough playmaking? But for me, with Draymond just stabilizing so many of their lineups, that I feel like they have some different groupings out there right now. So I'm going to give the floor back to you. I'm still not concerned. I'm not judging the Warriors till Draymond's back out there.
Okay, like... I guess I'm just trying to figure out, like, who's reliable beyond Steph and Draymond, to that matter. And this was kind of the question that I floated on a previous episode. We were talking about Western Conference contenders. And I think it was within the context of, like, Suns and Warriors and I think Utah at the time, at the top of the conference. Where my thing was like, okay, like, I know what Steph gives, but also... like, Steph seems to be, like, the only real creator they can trust. And, like, the number two guy becomes, because Klay was out at the time, the number two guy becomes either Jordan Poole or Andrew Wiggins. And, like, compared to these other teams, I'm just like, is that something that I feel comfortable with within, like, the title race? And I wasn't sure. And so now we hit this stretch where, you know, Dre is out. But even before that, like, Steph was struggling from deep. And it's like, okay, who's consistently picking up the slack? Jordan Poole has had moments this year. He's currently on the slide right now. Andrew Wiggins is in the All-Star race. But, like, would you say, like, he's still very much been more play finisher than shot creator this year in terms of role, which has led to, you know, the fringe All-Star berth that he had or the All-Star case that he has. But, like, when asked to take on more, like, those... you know, those outings without Steph have not looked great for Andrew Wiggins. And so, like, I've just kind of figured, like, all right, who's... and then now they're trying to work Klay in. And first couple of games were fine for Klay, but, like, he's still very much trying to find his rhythm. Like, I'm not poo-pooing on Klay. Like, I think he's going to be fine overall. But, like, even then, when Klay's fine, what does that look like from, like, a pure shot creation standpoint? Like, is that the number two at this stage?
Well, the beauty of the Warriors' early run was it was a lot of Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins, and they step up to the plate, perform consistently. The issue now that you may be bringing up is, oh, they need them to do that. So it's not as much a luxury. Like, those guys have to make baskets, and if they're both at a rhythm, it looks like this, where Klay comes back and now Jordan Poole can't find himself, doesn't have the same aggression. For some reason, he's not... hadn't looked the same. And now, is Wiggins still playing as loose as he was earlier in the season, or are we getting back to kind of the plays being forced, you know, where plays are being created for him as opposed to let's post up Wiggins? Like, are they finding him, or does it looks similar at times during the stretch to last year, where it felt like Steve Kerr was trying to get Andrew Wiggins going instead of Andrew Wiggins just getting going through the flow? And I feel like that's an interesting dynamic. And now you have a balance of sort where it feels like during this run, they're running a lot more pick and roll, feels like. And can you, is Jordan Poole just Jordan Clarkson?
For Golden State's sake, they better hope not. Like, they have to hope that he's better than that. And, like, for, you know, for clarity's sake, like, I think if he's not, then at the very least he will be better than that. So, like, I'm not concerned about Poole long term. But, like, the streakiness is a little bit concerning. I will say that much. And, like, for the strides that he's made as a driver this season, like, he isn't a high free throw rate guy either. And, like, here's the other, I guess, the secret sauce of this for me when in terms of Golden State's offense, like, so much of their rim pressure is predicated on Steph making teams wrong off the ball. And so, like, you can still generate some of that. And against bad teams, you can generate a lot of that. But against better teams, if you have Steph slumping, it really gets a little murky for Golden State in the half court. like the margin for error just shrinks for them in a way that makes me a little bit uncomfortable.
Now, when you say murky, define murky for me. Because this is still, this is a team that's been running post splits for 8 years in a row and no one knows how to defend it yet. So I'm gonna have to wonder what you mean by murky, because they still get that going.
I mean, murky beyond Steph, because like they're running the post split, like the play that you yell about on Twitter like 8 times a week is still Kevon Looney setting it up for Steph. I mean, like beyond Steph, it's like, okay, where's the good offense being generated, if that makes sense? Where are the clean looks being created?
I think the tempo is a little bit off. Like the cuts just don't feel the same. The traffic doesn't feel the same. And that's where I pause and say, let me see what it looks like when Draymond comes back. So I don't think you're wrong, but it feels like they're trying to do those things on both ends of the floor. Because even defensively, you still see the rotations, you see the scheme things that we talked about, but there's something missing. You know, they don't have that same backline guy. They're missing, they're late, they're not closing out as hard, just little things. But I think offensively, you have more scenarios where they're walking it up, starting a set with 18 on the clock. Maybe there's only a couple passes. And they can't necessarily win that way, I don't think. They have to be able to impose their will. But I'm with you, though. It is a lot of Wiggins and Poole that they need. And now the dynamic of this stretch is, how do we get them going? Is it just Jordan Poole pick and roll reps? Because it feels like they're leaning a little bit more towards that, as opposed to he's kind of doing the Steph stuff, but not being Steph. You know what I mean? Like it felt like they had the same continuity, but now it kind of feels like we need to get Jordan Poole going. Let's give him the ball and pick and roll. Let him go loose. We need to get Andrew Wiggins going. Let's get the ball. Let's get it loose. So I think that's an interesting dynamic, where do they trust their offense to generate those looks, or do they know how badly they need those guys to get going?
It feels like the latter, which, you know, if you use this bumpy stretch, get full strength, and now it's like, okay, now it's playoff time. Those reps helped us build to something, and now we're more equipped to deal with the different types of defense we want to see. Now we're better equipped to deal with a step off night. Then, like, these talks mean nothing if it ends up paying off. But of course, like, you know, it's January. Like, I can only talk about what's happening right now to a certain degree. So that's why I was like, huh, what's going on here? Because it would be one thing if this is just, huh, the Warriors had a bad week. This is the Warriors have had a bad month, and then they lost their primary connector, which further complicates what we've been seeing with offense. And that's why I'm just kind of like, okay, I kind of want to talk about this and pick your brain on this.
No, it's fair. I think what you're saying is fair. I also think they're just trying stuff. Like, they ran a post split to throw the ball to Steph in the post. I think he made a skip pass against Utah. But like, they're just doing stuff right now, it feels like, which is not the same machine that was humming earlier this season. And I think, to what you've said for the majority of the season, I think it's fair to wonder what happens in those slower games in the half court when things slow down. But it just feels like they're using Steph in weird ways. Like, man set a pick and roll for Nemanja against Utah. It's just like they're just doing stuff. Like, hey, we have an opportunity without Draymond to just kind of try some stuff. I don't know how much of it's working, though.
Yeah, I just have my brow raised right now. That this is literally what this section is for. The Golden State is making me go, right now.
Nah, and, you ready to strike?
Don't do this. But, like, it's funny to talk about, not funny, but, like, it's interesting to talk about, like, okay, Golden State's having these kind of issues, the shooting, the creation, whatever, Draymond being out, whatever, whatever, whatever. And then, you know, we just talked about Phoenix a little bit earlier, where it's like, oh, no Devin Booker, that's fine. We're just going to shift the ball to Chris Paul, and he's going to make music and pick and roll. Oh, Chris Paul doesn't have it tonight. That's fine. We're just going to move the offense back to Devin. We're going to do that. Oh, that's fine. We're facing a team with rangy defenders on the perimeter that can make life tough for both of them. Cool. We're just going to dump it to DeAndre Ayton. Oh, wait, we don't have Ayton. We're just going to do something else. And it's just like, I would feel much better about Golden State if they had those kind of, okay, no Steph, we're going to go here. All right, no Dre, we're going to go here. Right now, it's, okay, Steph is off. Now we're searching. And, like, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Again, Golden State, even during this stretch, like, they're over 500 since, like, December 16th. Even with the bad offense, they have a positive net rating. So like, it's not death to the Warriors, but it's just like, it's a bigger microscope, I guess, for me, since the Warriors are in the elite of the elite class. It's them, it's Phoenix, it's, you know, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Miami, whatever. Since they're in that class, I'm just kind of like, okay, I got to look a little bit more closely since I already view them up here. And that's where the questions come in for me.
No, I think it's fair. I definitely think it's fair. And then you can even wonder, can they balance multiple play styles? I know you have your concerns about the movement come playoff time. Is this a preview of things to come? Is it as simple as being able to print out a stat sheet and going, hey, you need Wiggins and Poole to average 35 points a game to make this work? We're going to cut that in half in the playoffs. Now, what do you have? You know what I mean? Like, it's intriguing. It's interesting.
It's, we shall see. Quick note to close this out. Just pulled it up on Cleaning the Glass. Golden State is 17th in half-court offense against top 10 defenses this year. 91 points per 100 plays.
Ooh, there we go. Who's number one?
Number one is Utah.
Ooh.
How about it?
Interesting. Who's number two?
Number two is Atlanta.
I got to talk to Ben. This stat don't make no sense. Hey, Ben, what's up with the formula?
There we go.
Where's Milwaukee?
Milwaukee is 13th.
Huh.
You know who's four? The Lakers.
Oh, all right.
Fun stat. Just to key you in on how the gap here, though. Utah's won at 102.6 points per 100 plays. I said the Lakers are at four. They're at 94.5. Like, Utah's head and shoulders above everyone against top 10 defenses this year. Which I would assume this is, you know, the healthy version of Utah getting these matchups, because the version they have on the floor right now is not that. Anyway, are there any teams that have you raising your brow right now?
Just going real quick. For me, it's Washington and Toronto in tandem.
Okay.
Because I feel like I see the vision for both of these teams, but I don't know if they can do it well enough consistently to make it work. Like, Washington took a hit defensively, and the offensive concerns that I kind of had early, like, are still showing up. Like, Kuzma's balling, but who else is there? Do we have Bradley Beal going? Have we figured out the Dinwiddie thing? Go ahead.
I just want to stop you right there. What a wild thing to be saying in 2022. We got Kyle Kuzma going. How about Bradley Beal? Like, the fact that that's the order in which, and legitimately so, like, the fact that that's the order further drives home the point that Washington is an interesting team right now. You can go ahead.
No, but it's a weird thing because Kuzma is playing well. I don't want to say because of how teams are guarding Bradley Beal, but he's doing what he's supposed to do in the sense that Bradley Beal draws in the defense. He's knocking down shots. He's making plays. The only issue is you don't also have Bradley Beal going. And then on top of that, you don't also have Spencer Dinwiddie going. So it's kind of just like Kuzma and KCP and dot, dot, dot. And you combine that with the defense just kind of going back and forth. Mm-hmm. It's like, which version are we getting of this team? You know, I love Trez. I love what they've done. I love the effort. Gafford, you got Hachimura back. You got Denny playing well. You got pieces, but are they going to come together to help you make another run? And then I don't even know, like, what is Toronto? I don't even mean that, like, facetiously. I'm just asking. If I were to ask you, like, what are they?
They are an interesting bunch. They are a tremendous transition team that still has questions in the half court. Thank goodness they are finally letting Pascal run more pick and rolls. That's cool. But, like, they are a team that has some questions on the half court. Defensively, they're figuring some things out. But the overarching thing is that they do not have a lot of playable guys right now. And I think we're now hitting the point where the minutes are starting to add up for their most important guys. And so now you have a Fred VanVleet slumping from three. And you have other guys slumping with their jumpers. And then it further highlights, oh, wait, we don't really have a good replacement for these guys to spell them for minutes. So, like, we just kind of have to hope you can shoot yourself out of this slump because the literal backup is not great. Like, who's Toronto's backup point guard right now?
I was pausing for emphasis, but...
Yeah, like, their backup point guard is basically Pascal Siakam, and that's your problem. Not that he can't handle ball handling reps, it's that they do not have a legitimate backup point guard for Fred VanVleet right now.
On a team with this many drivers... Am I overreacting with their playmaking concerns? Like, it feels like they should be able to create more plays for each other with the personnel they have, but it feels like they never do.
I don't think you're overreacting. Like Fred's a plus passer for his position. Pascal is very much a plus passer for his position. OG is sneakily a fine passer on the move. But, like, he hasn't gotten the, like, actual creation part down. Beyond those guys, and I want to be careful, I want to make sure I'm not forgetting anyone in the rotation, so let me go to the roster real quick, just make sure I'm not forgetting someone obvious. But, like... Man,
there's only, like, seven dudes playing right now.
Well, there's your thing.
But, like... The starters, Boucher, Precious every now and then. Who else?
Oh, Scotty Barnes is the one I'm missing. There we go. See, I was like, I know I'm forgetting somebody obvious.
Champagne? How do you say his last name? I should look it up. Sorry.
Like, he's been solid. Might have to bring him up on the... But anyway. But yeah, like, there aren't a ton of plus passers in their rotation. Like, it's three. And then Chris Boucher does not pass the ball at all. God bless whatever Precious Achiuwa does when he gets the ball in his hands. And this is all while, like, okay, who's really spacing the floor for him? OG can shoot. He's slumping right now. Fred can shoot. He's slumping right now. And you need him to run the offense. Pascal hasn't gotten the three ball back yet. Scotty's launching, but teams don't guard him. Not yet, anyway. And so, like, one, the floor is just kind of cramped, which is why teams are able to zone them to death when they want to. Shout out to Samson Folk, who just wrote a great piece about how zone defenses are bothering Toronto in the half court. So, like, one, they don't have a bunch of shooters that teams are afraid of. Gary Trent Jr. is a guy that can, but, like, he's been in and out of the lineup lately. And then beyond that, like, there aren't a bunch of plus passers. So even if they are able to create open shots, like, you have to trust that they can be hit. And it's a mixed bag right now.
I'm going to ask a controversial question, but they don't like me in Canada anyways.
Okay.
Are Pascal, OG, and Scotty Barnes in each other's way or no?
That's a tricky question for me.
Yeah, I brought the heat. I told you, I'm here today.
I would say, like, zooming out, I think no. I think it's a little bit in the way this year just because they're juggling a lot of on-ball reps. Like, Scotty has been, like, technically for worse in this case, but, like, it's obviously not a bad thing. But, like, he's so much better offensively that I think they anticipate in year one, he's warranted more on-ball reps. You obviously get Pascal back after, you know, the injury and the surgery and stuff. And, like, you need him to be that guy. And, you know, before Pascal even got back and before they really started handing the reins to Scotty in the half court, this is a thing we talked about on the podcast. It's something that I've written about. Like, they want to see, like, does OG Anunoby legit have star upside as a shot creator? So, like, he got a ton of reps early on. And so that's where I'm just like, okay, like, probably right now there's a little bit of toe-stepping. Like, Pascal and Scotty Barnes are figuring out some stuff in pick and roll and figuring out some high-low stuff. But I say it's not a long-term issue for me because at the end of the, like, when worst comes to worst, quote-unquote, OG Anunoby can just slot into a 3-and-D role. Like, we've seen him do it. And we've seen him do that on volume. And so, like, he doesn't have to be in. And Scotty is so instinctual off the ball. Like, I don't think that's going to be a problem. Like, he can be your hang in the dunker spot, float to the middle of the, you know, float to the middle of the lane for push shots if he can do, if he wants to. And Pascal can do the same thing. So, like, overall, I don't think it's an issue. But right now, I do think it's a little bit of, okay, what is my role right now? Because everyone's trying to find themselves still.
No, I was intrigued. I think they've scored 20 points in the same game 5 times this year. But I did quick math, so someone could fact check me on that. But just intrigued. I think Toronto has more than they've displayed so far this season. I don't think you want to play them in the play-in. I still like their defensive activity, but I just don't know which version I'm getting ever.
Again, it would help if they had some reinforcements. Like, I think, honestly, regardless of how you feel about Toronto as like a playoff slash play-in team or what, like, they probably need to add something at the trade deadline or in the buyout market just so they can normalize the rotation or stabilize the rotation. Like, they just need another NBA player that can give them 15 minutes every night. And I think a lot of their issues on both ends, if they're not solved, they at least get a little bit of relief. Because right now it's 6.5 in the rotation. In addition to the issues that you already kind of saw with them, like within their half court off and stuff. Like, they can at least play on all pro instead of all Madden. Or if we're going to go to basketball, or if they can play on superstar instead of Hall of Fame. There we go.
The hashtag is Big Ink.
I don't know if I like this bit any more than the other ones. Oh, goodness. All right. Who are the players that have stood out to you?
Bismack Biyombo.
There we go. A Steve pick through and through.
Oh, the year 2022. We got Bismack Biyombo making plays, Nikias. Making plays. I came on an interesting nugget, right?
Okay.
So apparently Bismack Biyombo has scored 16 or more points 9 times in his career. 3 of those have come with Phoenix. He's been there for like 10 games. But no, Bismack has been active, man. Like, I always joke, this man does not want to go home. He really doesn't want to go home. Like, he is protecting the rim. He's making short roll plays. He's catching the ball and finishing.
He's catching the ball.
He's screening, rolling. He's a connector in 2022. Like, I screen, I roll, I flash, I catch, I get another handoff, and it works. It fits. So I just want to give a salute to Bismack Biyombo, because I did not think we would be talking about him in the year of 2022, and I did not think he'd be having this quality of a season. But that's the beauty of the league. Guys come back, keep playing. Fitting opportunity is everything. I also want to talk about Joel Embiid.
Ooh, welcome back.
So in the month of January, this man's averaging 33 points a game, 10.5 rebounds, 4.9 assists, 1.3 blocks, shooting 55% from the field and 36 from three. Here's my other nugget, right?
Okay.
Joel Embiid has scored 30 or more in 5 straight games, right? Mm-hmm. He scored 30 or more in 10 of 11 games in January. This man scored 30 or more in 15 of his last 17 games. He deserves the MVP praise. And we'll talk about some more Sixer stuff. I got a couple questions for you, buddy.
Okay. This should be good.
LeBron James. According to old NBA.com's tracking, he's shooting 39% on pull-up threes over his last 15 games. What he's doing at this age is incredible. The salute to LeBron. Kevin Porter Jr.
Okay.
He has 7 or more assists in 4 straight games. I'm intrigued.
Also playing some pretty solid defense there in Houston.
Houston's got me perking my eyebrows a little bit.
Oh, there we go.
Well, at least they're fun again.
There we go. It was looking tested early in the year, but.
Do you know who the only San Antonio Spur to have 9 triple doubles in the season is?
It's DeJounte Murray.
Yes, it is. That is correct. Yusuf Nurkic is back, by the way.
What does that mean, though?
Like, long term or now?
Yes.
Well, it means Portland's. Might answer the question, who wants the 10 seed?
I see. Is that a good thing?
Hey, they're 3 games behind Minnesota for 7. I'm just saying.
Oh, no.
I'm just throwing it out there, Mr.
Chris the hamster's Finch. Going back on the wheel.
He has a double-double in 9 of his last 11 games. Averaging 17-13 this month. Just want to give him a salute for playing with force and finishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one final question before I pass the floor.
Okay.
You know the only player in the league with 60-plus steals and 50-plus blocks is?
That's a good question. Is it Matisse?
No.
Okay. Is it Giannis?
No.
Huh. It's going to be somebody obvious, I feel like.
It's Robert Covington.
Oh, well, okay. Not someone obvious. All right. There we go.
So there we go. That's all I got.
How about Rocco? Okay. Oh, Jesus. Well, okay. I want to kick this off with Chris Paul praise before you put Phoenix into the document before the show, which is like, okay, cool. I guess we're going to talk about him anyway. So I had a stat that was, of course, blown up by this game. So I don't even know if it's true or not. But heading into Monday's action, 17 players were averaging at least 7 assists in January. Only 2 of them, Fred VanVleet and Jimmy Butler, were averaging fewer turnovers than Chris Paul was. And Chris Paul was leading the NBA in the month, averaging over 11 assists. Like, the amount of 10-plus assists, 2 or fewer turnover games that Chris Paul has put together in his career is just absolutely absurd. Just a level of decision-making. Also some conservatism. But, like, the fact that he's able to maximize possessions the way that he does, like, it's truly machine. Like, I have enjoyed him. I'm always going to enjoy watching Chris Paul play basketball. But also, please not down some threes. But want to give Chris Paul a nod. Want to give RJ Barrett a nod. The Knicks are still nicking right now. 500 over the last 12 or so. But, like, he's playing well. 3 balls falling for him. Defense still sturdy on the ball. Off the ball, I'll just say that he takes the Knicks scheme to heart. We'll put it that way. He does not mind rotating. We'll put it that way. But anyway, enjoying the shooting, enjoying him getting downhill, enjoying him getting more pick and roll reps. Like, let him do that. Like, let him grow in that role. That would be nice to see. A bright spot in New York right now. You touched on a little bit earlier, Kyle Kuzma, who's averaging 22-11 in January. He's not even hitting 3 ball at a high clip right now, but everything else, like, he's getting downhill on drives. He's posting up mismatches. The post game has just been fun to watch. Like, he's actually getting into the mid-range bag with turnarounds and the duck ends and the hooks. He looks comfortable. He's playing free. He's having fun out. A quick note on this guy, just as a, hey, you might want to trade for this guy note. Justin Holiday shooting 42% from 3 on 8 attempts in January. Still running around. Still filling the lanes in transition. Still cutting. Still trying to defend, you know, overtasked with some of the guys that he's asked to defend. But contenders should be on the eye for Justin Holiday. Last guy I had was Amir Coffey, who's been filling some gaps in L.A. Averaging 12 points, 4 boards, 3 assists in the month of January, shooting 42% from 3 in 5 attempts. Teams aren't, like, losing their heads, running him off the line. So I want to see, like, how long it's going to take for that to shift. Like, he did shoot pretty well from 3 last year, but on low volume. So I wonder when the scouting report is going to change or if it's going to change. But right now, he's knocking down perimeter shots. Like, the Clippers let him run a ball screen every now and then. Like, he's tossing skip passes. Anytime I see, like, a secondary ball handler tossing skip passes with comfort, it's like, okay, wait. Does he have some juice or do teams not know about him yet? So I'm going to be watching that a little bit more closely. He's been fun. Has some touch in the mid-range area. He's got some floaters. Like, the Philly game was fun for him. Didn't shoot super well, but did knock down the go-ahead TJ McConnell-esque 8-foot pull-up jumper to give the Clippers a lead late in that game. First quarter in that game, he grabs a board, flows right into double drag, goes into a mid-range floater. It's like, okay, this is someone I need to keep an eye on. So quick shout-out to Amir Coffey to close this thing out.
I like it. Giving the folks some coffee in the morning.
Yep. And this is why we drop on Tuesday mornings, you know? Got to get the day started right. Do you want to flow into some free throws? I feel like you have some evil stuff in tow for me.
Oh, me? Evil?
Yeah.
Never, ever, 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 ever that. Yes, I do have some for you. just a little callback here. Do you respect PJ Tucker leading the league in 3-point percentage?
Yeah, you know, nothing but love for PJ Tucker. You know, he's doing the thing.
You did not have the same energy when it was Jonas, but that's fine. We'll revisit that a different day. Don't you worry about it, buddy. I don't get the three attempts that Jazz isn't there this time. It's a little different when it's PJ, huh? Yeah.
I knew a bit was coming. It's fine.
Energy was not kept. Is Rudy Gobert still the most impactful player for Utah?
This is dirty. Honestly, what their defense looked like without him, probably, yeah.
I wrote that question down while watching the Jazz play the Pistons.
I see.
After they played the Rock. Anyways, who do you trust more, the Sixers or the Clippers?
The Sixers or the Clippers?
Who do you trust more?
Is this a Ty Lue versus Doc Rivers question? Oh, okay. Because I have a very quick answer for that. I think it's... Shoot, man. The Clippers are fighting right now. I just don't know if their guys are good. I'll say the Sixers. Cause I just don't know if Paul George and or Kawhi are coming back.
Continued disrespect of Reggie Jackson and Marcus Morris. It's fine.
Okay.
What did Doc Rivers do to you?
What do you mean? What did he do to me?
This man cannot get the respect.
What do you... Oh, but I will say I got a good laugh at a reporter asking Doc Rivers a question. And Doc was like, hey, would you ask Pop that? Don't ask me that, man. I was like, oh, this is a little snazzy. I see. But no, Doc hasn't done anything to me personally.
You called this man Doc Quivers.
I didn't do that, but that's a good shot.
No, you did. October 1st, 2020. Doc Quivers, Nikias NBA, Twitter.
Doc Quivers, is that true?
Yep.
1000%. I have to look this up. Hold on. This seems like some cap. Let's see. Go. You can, if you have more, you can go ahead. I'm about to look this up.
Keep going. I'm just looking. I don't know. Oh boy.
Oh, that's a good tweet. Yeah, Joel Embiid makes Doc Rivers sad. Doc Quivers. Yeah, there we go.
He called Doc Rivers Chip Kelly. Goodness gracious! All right, back to the task at hand. Who's the more annoying 5 seed, the Cavs or the Mavs?
You did come with heat today. I think it's the Mavs.
Interesting. They're both feisty, both fun. Power rank these playoff ceilings. We'll start in the West. Wolves, Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets.
Okay. Wolves, Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets. Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me make sure I got this right. So this is for... Give me the prop.
Playoff ceilings. How you feel about them trust-wise in the playoffs.
And you said Lakers, Wolves, Clippers, and...
The Denver Nuggets.
Nuggets. Okay. Okay. I'm going to say Nuggets. I hate everything about this. Nuggets, Lakers, Wolves, Clippers. And again, okay. That's mostly, I just don't know who's coming back for the Clippers. And I think the Nuggets, I mean, one, they have Jokic, but also, like, they're getting Murray back at the very least.
Okay. We'll go East real quick. We'll go Sixers, Hornets, Celtics, Raptors.
Okay. Let me get this typed in. All right. We got Sixers. We got who else?
Sixers, Hornets, Celtics, Raptors.
Celtics and Raptors. Okay. I feel like I have to rank the Sixers last for the bit, but I'm not going to do it. I'd say Sixers. Sixers, Raptors, Celtics, Hornets.
All right, power rank this these four by old man game. Strengthen the old man game.
Okay.
Luka, who, by the way, had an amazing drive in neutral the other night. Just didn't really move fast and still went right to the rim. Jokic.
Okay.
DeMar DeRozan. and Drew Holiday.
Hmm. Okay. Hmm. This is funky. Okay. I'm going to go DeRozan, Jokic, Luka, Drew.
All right. Did you ask the people out there if you should purchase a gaming device, a PS2, to hide that you bought a fifth PS5?
This is such a bad bit, man. I have one PS5, a singular PS5.
And that's what you would say. Okay. I got some players for you, though, bud.
All right, what we got?
You ready? You ready?
I'm never ready, but yeah, let's get it.
I need a name for this segment. Oh, well. Luke Kennard or Evan Fournier?
Huh, okay. Kennard.
Vucevic or Sabonis?
Sabonis.
CJ McCollum or Kyle Lowry?
Lowry.
Kyle Kuzma or Jeremy Grant?
Kuzma.
Jaren Jackson Jr. or Clint Capella?
Jaren Jackson Jr.
Sadiq Bey or PJ Washington?
PJ.
Kelly Oubre or Marcus Morris?
Ooh. Oubre or Marcus Morris? Oh, man, that's fun. Okay, this is a good one. I'll give you your props. Crap, man. Morris, I think.
Dante DiVincenzo or Gary Trent Jr.?
I'm going to go Gary Trent Jr.
Oh, wow. That's an upset. Didn't have that one. Isaac Okoro or Talen Horton Tucker?
Yuck.
You went full Isaac Okono, huh? Okay.
God, this is... This is a... Oh, God. We'll go Okoro, I guess, but like I don't feel good about this.
You got potential on either side. Tristan Thompson or Ed Davis?
You know what? Give me Ed Davis.
Garrison Matthews or Max Strus?
Strus.
Joe Ingles or Kenrich Williams?
Kenrich.
Pascal Siakam or Tobias Harris?
For 29 organizations, the answer is Pascal Siakam.
Wow. Quick question for you. Has Kristaps Porzingis reached his peak?
How old is Kristaps? Like 26?
Let me check his age real quick.
There you go. But how old is Kristaps Porzingis? I don't feel like he's been in the league for a minute now, but like he came in young. Yeah, he's 26.
He's 26. You nailed it right on the head.
Yeah, here we go. Like, maybe there's a little bit more refinement in the post, I guess. I don't think he's reached his peak.
Okay. All right. Did you have any for me while I set this last one up?
I do not.
Oh, that was quick. Threw you the lob, but you just let it go out of bounds. You see how your teammates do you, man?
What you mean?
Call for the ball in the post and kicked it right back out. Don't do that.
Oh, man. We're not going semi-pro. That's crazy.
No, I have to scroll to find this tweet from you to make this make sense for the listeners. Everyone just bear with me for 2 seconds, right?
Oh, this is going to be good.
So Nikias had a thought about the Lakers starting lineup, right?
Oh, this is going to be good.
Okay. Found it, right? So he said, rule for Frank Vogel or whoever is coaching this team by Valentine's Day, which kind of rude, but if LeBron is the best shooter in your lineup is bad and you should feel bad. Go back to the drawing board. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Mm-hmm.
So I took this as a sign to go look for a lineup where LeBron James was featured as the best shooter. Now, if you recall, Nikias has Eric Spoelstra, holds him in high regards. You believe he's coach of the year, right?
Yes.
A man that deserves way more credit than he's received from the public at large, right?
Mm-hmm.
January 18th, 2011.
Wait a minute. January 18th, 2011 years ago.
The Miami Heat started LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Carlos Arroyo, Big Z, and Joel Anthony. Are you going to keep the same energy with Spo?
Like, I have to search my tweets, but I probably felt pretty bad about that lineup. I'm going to be honest with you. That is not a lineup I would agree with. How many minutes did that lineup play?
I mean, that's a question I know the answer to, but we're not doing Joel Anthony slander.
What do you mean? Nothing but respect for the warden on this podcast. However,
All right.
I would imagine that is not a lot. You said 2011, correct? So yeah. This is the 2010-2011 season. Mm-hmm. We're going to do some prime podcasting on this here. Hold on. We're about to go to the Miami Heat's lineup page. I need to see just how many.
Did you transfer your Joel Anthony love to Dwayne Dedman?
What? Oh, that's some stuff. Hold on. Is this what we're doing right now? Oh, no. I need the Stephen A. clip. Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. Wade James. And you also said, oh, okay, I guess I can just do it here. Hold on. Let's see. There's a Juwan. Okay, we had a Juwan Howard lineup in here that played 8 minutes. Okay, it was an 8 minute played 8 minutes all year long. One game, 8 minutes, a 57 offensive rating.
And they started.
They started and then literally never saw it again.
Keep that same energy.
What do you It was a bad lineup. It was bad, and he felt bad. That's why he played. What happened once? Do we get that lineup in the playoffs too? Hold on, let's see. Yeah, so literally never did it again. He felt bad. It was bad, and he felt bad. I rest my case. That is one lineup 11 years ago that played 8 minutes and never saw the light of day again.
Hey, I was just pointing it out, man. I'm just keep the same energy.
I'm just saying. Well, Spo should have felt bad. Now it looks like he did. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. Please rate and review. Get us the 300. Give us 300 reviews. You know, leave a comment if it's funny, if it's insightful, if it's nice, we'll read it on the pod. You can find me on Twitter at NakaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Kevin Love is having himself a year, folks.